Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
We're moving into Mother's Day week. So how many of you guys spend most of Mother's Day focused on the moms in your life and the moms in your kids' life? I know that, gosh, I'm buying Mother's Day gifts for at least three other mothers, but yet advertising is still focused on the dad and the men in the world, when in reality, it's moms who are spending most of the money. So this Mother's Day, why don't you join us online for Mom's Night Out? It's Thursday night, and you can follow me at Mom Talk Radio, where we'll be celebrating National Mom's Night Out. Grab a girlfriend and put your feet up and do a little celebrating for Mother's Day with yourself and your girlfriends. And then on Mother's Day, when you're focused on grandma and your own mom and your aunties and all the rest, you can know that you've already celebrated Mother's Day on your own. So if you're not hungover from Cinco de Mayo, you can think about all of the beverages and indulgences that you want for Mother's Day this week. Okay, so it's May, and many of us are dealing with graduations, and I'm not going to say dealing with, celebrating graduations. I'd like to have a call out to my son, Keenan, who this weekend graduated with his master's degree from Ohio State University, his master's in kinesiology. It sounds really interesting, right? I think it's really a master's in weightlifting, but anyways, congratulations, Keenan. So excited that I no longer have to pay your tuition for out-of-state college. But I'm very proud of you on a serious note, very proud of you and your accomplishments. And now as you enter getting another degree soon, starting in September, I wish you all the luck, and I'm so glad someone else is paying for that tuition and not me. Anyways, we have a great show lined up for you. Today's show is brought to you by Pre-Mama. You can drink Pre-Mama so that you don't have to gag on those big prenatal pills. You can find it at CVS, Target, Amazon, and other specialty stores. And you can go to drinkpremama.com to find out more information. So on today's show, we are going to be talking about beehiving, believe it or not, with someone that has worked with Bill Nye for many years. We're going to be talking with a mom who is the author of Holy Hustle. And we're going to be saying no to those placenta pictures. Yes, can you imagine having those placenta pictures? We have lots of authors with a lot of really exciting and new topics, and I'm so excited that you're here to kick off the summer, the hot summer months with me on Mom Talk Radio. So when we return, we have Lynn Burnell with us, the author of Turn This Book Into a Beehive.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
Delighted to have with us the author of Turn This Book Into a Beehive. Lynn Burnell is joining us. She's a four-time Emmy Award-winning writer for Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and the author of over 45 books, including the best-selling Pop Bottle Science and Camp Out. She's a regular contributor to King's TV and many others, and she's joining us here on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
So this whole beehive thing and beekeeping really seems to be taking off, particularly with the millennials and a lot of empty nesters. Like, I know so many people who are into natural honey and beekeeping. What's spawning this? No pun intended.
Well, I think the danger, you know, the thing is that the honeybees are in danger, and we need to kind of keep them around, because if we don't have bees, we don't have pollination. If we don't have pollination, we don't really have food or cotton for clothing. So we need to keep them around. And beekeeping is an amazing thing to me, because it's bigger than we think, meaning that there are honeybees, but actually there are only 7 species of bees that produce honey out of 20,000 bee species on the planet.
Wow, that's amazing. So what do you need to get into beekeeping. Like, I know you talk about the mason bee, so let's talk about that first.
Right. So what I talk about, this book is about, there's two groups of bees. There's social bees and there's solitary bees. Social bees are the honeybees. They're the ones that have a queen with all the workers that support her and protect her, and those workers sting and they make honey. And then there's the solitary bees that don't live together in a hive. They live on their own. Every girl's a queen. There isn't just one queen. Every female makes her own eggs. And they don't make honey, these solitary bees, but it turns out that these guys are uber pollinators, like way better than honeybees. So with all the problems that we're having with honeybees, with the hive collapse, so that the hives all around the country are collapsed, all around the world, bees are dying and nobody knows why. These wild mason bees that we have flying around in our yards anyway can actually help pick up the slack and be the pollinators that can probably save us.
As we go into the summer months, is like beekeeping, and is it something that you could do as a family?
Yeah, especially with the mason bees, because they're stingless. They don't sting. They're friendly bees. So if you put up these homes in the springtime and in summertime, if you give them, if you sort of build it, they will come, making sure they have, you know, flowers and water, plenty of that kind of stuff, inviting them around. Then they're going to come and pollinate your yard, your garden, your orchard, whatever you have. So it's definitely fun for the family. And you know, it's literally a little hive of activity. I put a prototype up in my garden last year when I was writing the book, and I used to be the person that if I heard a buzz, I would run the opposite way. But now I hear a buzz in the garden, and I look, and I'm like, oh, what are you, and what are you eating, and what are you doing? And, you know, it's amazing to see them work all day to gather all this food to basically to raise their babies.
So how do you attract the mason bee and not the rest of the bees? Because, like, I have a daughter who's allergic to bees.
Yes.
Or bee stings, so I would want to be careful.
You would want to be careful. You know, honeybees do sting. They've got a lot to protect. They're protecting their queen, and they're protecting all that honey, as it takes so much to actually create honey. One honeybee, all its life will gather pollen and nectar and make one teaspoon of honey. So that's a lot of energy going into that resource. So that's why they have venom, and they actually it's the venom that people are allergic to. The sting inserts the venom. Mason bees don't have venom. And they're actually friendly. They're busy. They don't have time to go after anybody and sting them. So, you know, if you mess with them, they're going to poke you, but they don't have any venom, so you're not going to have a reaction to it. So you just have to sort of be, I think you have to just be careful. No bee really wants to come out and sting you. They're there to, they're protecting their hive. So if you build a mason bee hive, you're not going to get honeybees making a home in there. You're going to get solitary bees making a home in there.
So what, from a parent perspective, what's the benefit, or what can a child learn from building a beehive and maintaining it with their mom?
I think just sort of, you know, getting a real sense of the interconnectedness of things, right? I mean, bees are a real keystone species, so it's kind of like a big Jenga tower, right? And if you pull out the bee, then the tower's going to collapse. But if you're working together, you know, with your mom in the garden and seeing the effect that something that you know, it's kind of weird to think about bees and food. It doesn't necessarily go together when you're a kid. But then if you actually see what's happening and you see how the bees are helping the plants become, you know, to thrive more, then you kind of get this real sense of the interconnectedness of things. I think it's a great way to teach kids to kind of be stewards for the earth, because it's theirs, you know, and it's their children's and their children's and their children's, and why not start now?
And what about the cost? What's the cost involved?
Well, you know, for mason bees, nothing. You roll up paper tubes and you stick them, you know, you stick them in something with the book that I have is sort of, it's like a transformer. The front part of the book has all the information you want to know about bees, you know, how bees smell, how bees see, that kind of stuff, with all sorts of science experiments. And then the last part of the book is just blank pages with illustrations on them, and you're meant to roll them around a pencil, and you make these tubes. You turn the cover inside out because it's a nice vinyl, a waterproof material. You turn the cover inside out, and you load it with the tubes, and you just hang that up in your garden, and the bees will come. But, you know, you can do it with other things, just rolling up printer paper tubes and putting them in someplace waterproof, and bees will come there.
Well, it's certainly very, very interesting. And I'm just wondering, can you do it in one summer, or is it something that takes a long time?
Well, it isn't, you know, it's a patience project. But as I said, I put mine out.
Oh, well, there's the lesson right there, Lynn.
Exactly. And it changes, you know. It's like, it's just fun to go out there and see. But, you know, I put my beehive out last spring, and the bees did come. It didn't fill up, you know, but I certainly got a dozen bees making homes in there. And it was really cool to see. And you don't always see them, but you always see evidence of their work, which is also another cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so where can everyone go to find the book?
I think where books are sold, and find bookstores everywhere.
So this is a great activity for the summer, you guys. When that child says, "Mom, I am bored," it is the time to pull out the book, turn this book into a beehive, and you can find it, a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're going to turn the spotlight on Crystal Stein. She is the author of Holy Hustle, about encouraging women that our work is worth something no matter what the title is. Can't wait to speak with Crystal, and we'll have her when we return.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
And before we break, let me just tell you about Mom TV, the place that you need to go online when you want to see what we're doing here on Mom Talk Radio. We have videos for and by moms, everything that you can think of, all the subject matter that relates to a mom, everything for how to feed your child to product reviews. So if you're thinking about a stroller, go to Mom TV. If you're thinking, "Oh my gosh, I don't know how to prepare for back to school season," go to Mom TV, your video destination online, where you can find and watch information that is relevant to you as a mom. It's a great place, and we hope you'll join us on momtv.com. To have a very smart woman who has written a really cool book. It's called Holy Hustle, and her name is Crystal Stein. She is the mom of a 5-year-old. You can find her at crystalstein.me, and that's with a C. And her book is called Holy Hustle. It's about encouraging women that our work has worth no matter what our title. And I'm going to let her tell you more about it because it's really an interesting concept. So welcome, Crystal, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. So let's start with Holy Hustle. Like, I never think of what I'm doing as hustling, but it is really.
It is. And we do so many things as women. I think if we sat down and actually wrote down all the jobs that we do, we'd be amazed. And I think that hustle has kind of taken on a bad connotation. We think of it as, you know, striving and working 24/7 and, you know, climbing ladders and stepping on people, right? But we can do it differently if we think about our work as something we can use to honor our families and honor one another. And we can actually have a lot of fun with our hustle.
Yeah. So you have some tips. And the first one is stop doing everyone else's work. And why is that a tip?
Well, for me, I tend to love to work, and I have a hard time stopping. And I'm also, I love a personality quiz, so I've taken enough to know that responsibility is pretty high on my list of things that I'm good at. So if I see a need, I will absolutely take it on, even if it's not my job, which means I don't give myself time to stop and rest. And so if I can focus on the work that is just mine to do, whatever that looks like, then I actually can work hard and enjoy it, and then also rest well without feeling guilty about it because I don't have a huge to-do list that's left over.
That's really, really good advice. Why do you think it's so hard for us to take that advice, though? Because it makes sense when you say it.
It does, but I think that we all have this need to feel needed, right? And so the more we can do and the more we can take on, the more we feel like we have job security, or we're going to be noticed, or we'll be needed and feel important. And I think that once we stop putting our value and our worth in things like our job titles or our office location or what we say we do when we meet someone in a grocery store, I think that we can start to just allow other people to do the jobs that they're really gifted at and give them the chance to do that while we can really work hard at the things that we're really good at.
Yeah, you know, just this weekend I was telling someone that I said something like, I feel like I spent the first 35 years of my life proving that I could do things. And now in the second half, I'm like, I don't need to prove it anymore. So I'm perfectly fine letting someone else do it. And I think you're right. I think we try to do all of this sometimes either to prove that we can or just because that's where we put our value of ourselves is doing it.
Absolutely.
So what about choosing healthy competition? We only have 2 minutes, so I need you to give me the condensed form.
Yes. So for me, competition looks like really trying to outdo one another with honor. So whenever we can stop comparing our work and what we're doing to what the woman next to us is doing, and instead try to find ways to encourage her and invite her and work together, we can do so much more. We can collaborate and we can be so much more creative and get much, much more great work done if we stop holding ourselves back because we're not doing what she's doing and just start encouraging her, because you can't encourage someone and be envious of them at the same time. Our brains just don't really work that way.
That's absolutely right. So tell us where we can go to find your book and what we'll find on your website.
You can find more about the book at holyhustlebook.com. And when you come to my website, you'll find encouragement and inspiration and stories from myself and sometimes other women about what holy hustle looks like for them, what it looks like to work hard and rest well and do it without shame or guilt, and to really embrace the roles that we've been given right where we are.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And we have a link to the book on Mom Talk Radio, Holy Hustle. There you have it. Good luck with that book. Okay, so have you ever thought to take a picture of your placenta? Yes, it is a thing. And there's two moms who have written a book called Say No to Placenta Pics. And we're going to be entertained and amazed by the sense of humor of Jill Parsons and Allison Bacon when we return.
Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
Every once in a while, we have a truly international interview, and this is it. We have Jill Parsons, who is in Nova Scotia, and Allison Berkin, who is in Holland, with me, who's in the United States. And Jillian and Allison are the authors of Say No to Placenta Pics. Jillian is a Nova Scotian author who began cultivating her bizarre sense of humor in her teens, turning classmates onto her talents and destroying lunch hour appetites with her school-written satire. And Allison is new to the literary world after collaborating with her childhood best friend, Jillian. That's how they got together there, you guys. They have kids, and now they are here on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Jillian and Allison.
Thank you for having us.
So both you guys are born in Nova Scotia, and you were raised in a seaside village of Chester, which is like a nautical playground, apparently. But you're extreme opposites in a way. So, Jillian, you want to speak a little bit to that?
Sure, yeah. Allison, I think, when did you move here, Alec? Grade two? You moved from Halifax?
Halifax.
Even from that age, we were very visibly different. I was kind of always like dirty and messy, and Allison was known and is still known for wearing bows in her hair and like perfect little slacks, and we've just always kind of stayed on those very different paths. And yeah, she's kind of more reserved and polite, I would say, less obnoxious, and I am really on the other end of that spectrum. But you know, we have the same sense of humor, the same kind of values, and we get annoyed and laugh at the same things.
Well, so what, Allison, made you guys want to write a book together?
Well, I think it was originally it came from Jillian's feeling, because of the group of friends, she was the last one to have children, and it was her funny perspective of what she was experiencing from our behavior of how we had changed once we all started having babies. And she reached out to other single women to hear what they had to say about it. Right, Jill? And
yeah.
And then we collaborated.
I still don't have children.
Okay.
Allison is the mom, and I'm the non-mom, and it's kind of like a dual perspective, the whole narrative through the book. You kind of hear from, like, Allison's stories, and then you hear my interpretation, and, you know, it's kind of back and forth. But, yeah, so it's just the observation.
So where did you come up with, how did you come up with the title of the book? Because it's very unusual.
That's a really diplomatic way to put that. Yeah, it is unusual. I think it was kind of the most shocking kind of manifestation of this new kind of moms on with social media involved in motherhood and maternity. It's we're really not even in a bad way, but it was like a boundary was broken there when you started seeing these all over social media,
Facebook.
People posting their own Facebook, and maybe, you know, it depends on who you talk to, what did the boundary need to be broken? I don't know, you know, to each their own, for sure, but it was just funny, and it was really a point to, it's quite grabby, I think, and the thing is it's valid, people are sharing these photos all the time.
Yes, and what other kind of, I'm wondering, Jillian, what other bizarre things as a non-mom do you see moms doing?
Oh, God. I'm always, yeah. There's a lot. I think there's a lot of fear that kind, and I get it, that kind of turns into, I don't know, a lot of declarations. Again, on social media, you see a lot of cookie cutter presentations of one another, you know, people wanting to be seen as with the kids playing outside and, you know, a kind of perfect imagery when really, I just think it's strange because we all know each other, you know, we all are imperfect and there really is no competition. If everyone would just back away, you know, without competitors, it won't exist. It's just funny. There's social media has just really added a layer here that makes it beyond interesting to a person that is not a mother.
Right. So, Allison, has there been a time when Jillian has just like not understood what you're going through and you're like, but this is what reality is for me?
Well, it's funny. Now that it's been 5 years since my daughter was a baby, I find myself reverting back to when I was childless because I had invited a friend somewhere and she has several children and she was just saying, oh, I think it was to go to a local pool. And she was like, do you know how much work that is for me? And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, you just throw them in the car and bring them to the pool. And then I think, no, when you have kids that are all under the age of five, the effort to pack that and to watch them all. And so that perspective of, I think when I had a small child, there was this feeling like, maybe you don't understand that it's really hard for me to leave for a night or...
Right.
And then maybe I should have relaxed about it more. And that's what the book kind of pokes fun and says, come on, was it really that big of a deal?
Yeah, I remember when I had three children under two and my friends that had just one baby were like, oh, just throw them in the car and meet us up at the ball pit or wherever, you know, at the playground. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, you want me to put three kids? That's three car seats I have to buckle.
Yes, and watch them all.
Right, exactly. So, Jillian, what do you aspire to most when you do become a mom?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't have kids now, but I've always wanted kids, and I come from a family. I have three sisters, so, you know, I want that big family. I'm used to that, and I think what's probably going to happen is that I'll have my kids, and I'll be forced to write a rebuttal to this book, because I'm sure
everything you made fun of,
look back and be like, oh, my God, I had no idea. Maybe, you know, who did I think I was? But I look forward to those realizations. I think it'll be funny, and I don't know. I'm excited about the prospect.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The thing with the book is that we don't actually, like, we're not mean and poke fun. It's more like, this is what you'll probably end up doing. Because even people who said, I can't believe people post their baby every day, and then they have a baby, and they do the same thing.
Yeah,
so
right,
like
exactly.
A rite of passage. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Allison, what do you, you know, as moms, we, like, when my sister had her baby, I used to say, oh my gosh, I cannot wait till she gets to this stage. What is the one thing that you are looking forward to for Jillian to experience in motherhood? Like, secretly, when you think about it, like, oh, I just can't wait till one day when this happens to her.
Like, in an evil way.
No, in a nice, yeah, nice evil way.
Right.
Well, the good thing is, I think she's been pretty sympathetic, but I can think for other certain friends that we have, I always think, like, they often say, I'm sure you could just get your child to bed if you just did this, this, and this. And I think, I can't wait until you have to try to get your child to eat or to put their shoes on or that sort of thing. So I guess anytime you've ever received unsolicited advice, that it's fun to think they're going to get it. It'll come.
That's right. What comes around goes around. Well, ladies,
yes.
Thank you so much. The book is called Say No to Placenta Pics. And Jillian and Allison, thanks so much for sharing a little bit of your sense of humor with us from the many places that you are around the world. And when we return, we're going to be speaking with the author of Homing Instincts, Early Motherhood on a Midwestern Farm.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am excited to have with us today Sarah Mankadeek, and she is the author of Homing Instincts, Early Motherhood on a Midwestern Farm. So we're moving from Nova Scotia onto a Midwestern farm on today's Mom Talk Radio. She's been featured in a whole bunch of magazines, and she's joining us today to talk about her book. So welcome, Sarah, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Sarah, you've done a lot of really interesting things in life. You trekked across South America. You taught English to teenagers on Reunion Island. You picked grapes in France, and now you have a book. So let's talk about a little bit about the book and from South Africa to France to Midwestern Farm. Tell us a little bit about that.
About that trajectory. Yes. Well, that is not one that I saw coming. I was very eager to get out of Ohio as a young woman. And ironically, I went to Wisconsin, which is not where most people fleeing Ohio might choose to go. But to me, it was a getaway. So I went to school in Madison, Wisconsin. And then immediately after graduating, I moved overseas and just sort of jumped from teaching job to teaching job, which was how I made that happen financially. And that was an amazing experience, and I sort of was testing the limits, I think, of what was possible, or testing the limits of my own life and trying to see how far I could go. And that was lovely. It was an amazing experience. Sort of towards the end, I started to become more serious about my career. I had often thought I would go back to graduate school for history, and I ended up focusing more on writing. So I came back to the U.S. to get my MFA in writing with the expectation that after that three-year program was over, I would immediately take off again and sort of resume what I'd spent the last decade doing. And then, you know, there obviously was a little bit of hesitancy there, though, when I finished, because we didn't take off immediately. My husband and I stuck around for a little while, and my dad, probably sensing that we might be on the verge of fleeing, offered us his cabin in rural southeastern Ohio. So they had, after my brother and I graduated from high school, they had bought some land in southeastern Ohio and built a house on it. And it had a little tiny cabin on the National Register of Historic Places. So we moved in there. And we're sort of in limbo trying to decide what we were going to do when I got pregnant. And that was that. So we said, okay, we're going to stay here for the next 9 months at least. And that ended up turning into about 2 years with a lot of time in Mexico in between. My husband is from Mexico. So that is the story of how I became unexpectedly rooted, more or less,
wow,
where I'd grown up. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I have a son that lives in Ohio, so I'm hoping all the good girls don't leave the state of Ohio for that reason. So what?
They'll come back eventually. Yeah.
Well, I hope so, because I want him to find a nice Midwestern girl. So, tell me, like, will moms who read the book, what will they find in there?
I hope that they'll find sort of a reflection of all of the sort of deeper philosophical and spiritual changes that happen during pregnancy and motherhood. And I don't by any means hope to speak for everyone or speak for anyone really beside myself. But I knew that when I was pregnant, I couldn't really find any books that spoke to the depth and complexity of that experience. I mean, you can find plenty of books about, you know, infant care and sleep training and all of that, but I really wanted something that felt like literature that spoke to the experience of pregnancy and that transformation. So that's what I'm trying to do with my book in terms of how it affected my sense of self in the world, how it affected my sense of what it meant to be from where I'm from, to be part of the family that I'm part of, and all of that.
We just have a couple more minutes. What's been the biggest surprise out of writing the book for you?
I think the biggest surprise has been the number of women who have reached out to me to say, you know, this really resonated with me, and I never thought I could talk about this experience as art, or I could realize it, you know, I could see it as something really valuable and really important, especially older women who had sort of gone through that, but had never had the time or the space to consider it as something that was worthy of paying really close attention to, or of writing about, or of making art about. And so that has been really powerful and transformative for me.
I am excited for you. It's like, looks like a wonderful book, and I can't wait to read it myself. And I appreciate you giving so much of your time to moms, because you've done and been places where a lot of moms have never gone before. Can you tell us real quickly where we can find the book?
You should be able to find it at your local indie bookseller, or, you know, at Barnes & Noble, or any place where you typically buy books.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio. And we have a link to it on our website at momtalkradio.com. You know, as we enter the summer months, we're going to be talking a lot more about travel. But if you haven't considered what you're doing with your teenagers this year, you might want to look into pre-college programs. It's a great way for them to earn college credits and experience college before it's actually time to move out of the house. I love it. You can Google pre-college programs, and my kids all did it, and very, very well worth the money and the time, and it really gives them a lot of self-confidence before it's time to move out onto the campus. So when we return, we're going to be speaking with the author of Debunking the Bump, What the Data Really Says About Pregnancy's 165 Biggest Risks and Myths.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
This show has definitely been one of those shows where we travel all over the world to bring you the best guest ever. And now we are traveling to London, where we have Daphne Adler. She's the author of Debunking the Bump, What the Data Really Says About Pregnancy's 165 Biggest Mistakes and Myths. She is a double grad from Harvard, and she lives currently in London with her husband and 3 children. So welcome, Daphne, to our side of the pond, and thanks for being up a little late to talk to us.
Thank you very much.
So tell me, why did you decide to look at data, other than you have a Harvard degree twice, and that's probably where most of you guys go, but what made you do that?
Well, it's partly my professional background. So I've worked in management consulting for many years. And so when I'm advising my clients, we typically try to answer their questions with a data-driven response. And so when I was pregnant with my first child, that was my instinct. And what really drove it for me in terms of writing a book about pregnancy was I was eating lunch in my work cafeteria. And a colleague came over and looked absolutely horrified that I was eating some pasta with Parmesan cheese on it, because he said, "Don't you know that Parmesan cheese is extremely dangerous to eat during pregnancy?" And he made me march over to the trash can and throw my lunch away. But that set me thinking, you know, to what extent is Parmesan actually dangerous? And if it is dangerous, how would that compare to other risks I might be knowingly taking, like going for a drive in a car? And so that's what set me down the path of looking into this topic. I never really intended to write a book, but the more that I researched, the more I discovered some really interesting inconsistencies and discovered a lot of the prevailing wisdom about pregnancy was wrong, which made me decide I wanted to write that up into a book.
What's probably the most startling myth that you found?
The one that surprised me the most was actually about fish. So most people I know were giving up fish while they were pregnant, particularly sushi, but just generally trying to limit their consumption of fish because they were quite concerned about the mercury in the fish. And when I investigated, it turns out that indeed, yes, mercury is definitely harmful to the baby during pregnancy, but the difficulty is that your body burden of mercury builds up over long periods of time and takes a long time to then flush out. So if you were to stop eating fish when you're pregnant, it would take about a year before there would actually be any impact of that decision. On the flip side, it turns out that fish are incredibly beneficial during pregnancy, particularly oily fish, so things like salmon and mackerel, and they think it could be the omega-3s. You know, research is still underway, but clearly there's an enormous benefit to your baby's brain development to be eating oily fish. And so what that means is women have it exactly reversed. What they should theoretically be doing if they want to be perfect and get their A-plus in parenting is not eating so much fish in the run-up to being pregnancy for a couple of years, and then they should be binging on as much fish as they possibly can while they're pregnant. And most women, of course, do the opposite. There's also a big concern about sushi, the fact that it's eaten raw, and people are worried that that might be bad, but it turns out really the worst that can possibly happen is you might contract some kind of intestinal parasite, which is disgusting, but fortunately that doesn't connect into your uterus, and all the medicines used to treat it are completely harmless during pregnancy, and so really my advice to women is eat as much sushi or whatever type of fish you like as possible.
There you have it. And so is there one in particular that that you were surprised at?
There were a couple that surprised me. One was that actually driving ended up being the top of my list of things not to do when you're pregnant. So that obviously wouldn't appear in any other pregnancy book. And in fact, I'm not trying to imply that driving is specifically more dangerous when you're pregnant in any way. It's more just that we all are very accepting of the fact that there are risks associated with getting into a car. And just looking at the statistics, you are more likely to get in a car crash than to have any of the other unpleasant outcomes that people fear during pregnancy. So if you were a purely rational individual, you would try to limit your driving. But really, that's meant to just put things into context, saying if you're not worried about driving, then you probably shouldn't be worried about a lot of the other behaviors that people tell you are taboo when you're pregnant.
Right. And so where can folks go to find your book?
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon, both in hard copy and as a Kindle ebook, and then it's also available in Barnes & Noble and a variety of other bookstores across the U.S. and also in other countries as well.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the book, and I appreciate you being with us today on Mom Talk Radio, and I appreciate all of you being here on Mom Talk Radio. Join us every week here on this time, and if you miss me during the week, you can go to Mom Talk at Mom Talk on Twitter. You can find me there all the time, or go to our Facebook page. But I look forward to talking with you again next week, where we have a whole summer worth of information and fun coming your way. So stay with us. The warm weather is coming. And next week, Mother's Day, we can spend it together. I'm Maria Bailey for Mom Talk Radio. See you next week, everyone.